We now take you to exclusive audio footage inside the Vegas Golden Knights dressing room before every home game.
Prepare to rally the troops. We've got to be ready for them.
We can do this. We're gonna beat those guys. We're the Vegas Golden Knights.
No one expects us to win, so we just gotta keep winning!
Boys, we can do this. We're the Golden Knights. We owe it to our fans. We owe it to the league. We are not doormats.
I've got a third-grade concussion, but I'm gonna play through the pain. That's what we do because we are the Golden Knights. For victory, only death or victory.
I'm the seventh-string goalie, but I'm gonna give it everything I've got. I will beat Sidney Crosby. I will beat Auston Matthews. I'm the seventh-string goalie. And now, exclusive audio footage inside the dressing room of every road team for a Vegas Golden Knights game.
Dude, I think I got chlamydia.
Dude, I think I got chlamydia on my feet.
What's that thing where your jock itches because you spent most of the night naked?
I think that's chlamydia.
Oh man, my head hurts. I think I got like 2 hours of sleep. How the hell am I supposed to get on my skates?
Oh, dude, I've got such a major headache. I can't believe I just woke up 10 minutes ago and I'm already in my uniform.
Somehow I had my pocket aces cracked 4 times, man. 4 times. I must have dropped like 15 dimes on this goddamn place. I can't wait for this game to be over. I'm gonna go ahead and lollygag.
Oh, man. Oh, Shoshana and Laniqua and Shaniqua. What a night.
Exactly what part of Vegas were you in? Someone literally just tweeted me, how the hell did you guys get a microphone in the visitor's locker room? And I'm like, budget.
Yeah, our budget increased. It's increased tenfold. I'm telling you.
Happy New Year indeed, eh?
Happy New Year indeed. It is January 3rd, our first episode of 2018. Can you imagine that? 2018.
I think what shocks me enormously is just thinking how quickly time has passed. We're already, this is what, episode 21? I can't believe that. It seems like yesterday it was episode 20.
2018, which means we will safely approach the 25th anniversary of the Montreal Canadiens not winning a Stanley Cup.
Man, that's the worst way to start the year, giving these bad vibes. I feel terrible as it is with the passing of Johnny Bauer, to be honest with you. Time really is flying by, isn't it? Do you feel like we're in a TARDIS?
I do a little bit, yeah. It's, you know, there's a big tribute today about Johnny Bauer and his passing. And Johnny is one of those athletes that transcends the team that he played on. I mean, I think everyone, whether they're a Habs fan or a Leafs fan or any other hockey fan, can appreciate what Johnny brought to the game and the type of person that Johnny was. He just seemed like a great, lovable man, and he helped a lot of people along the way, and it's really, really sad to see his passing.
And to think that as far as I can remember following this team, when I was a little wee boy watching the Ed Olchicks, the Dan Daus, the Brad Marshes of the world, with Alan Bester and Nett doing his best Johnny Bauer, he was always there. His face is just ubiquitous in my head. I can't get it out of my head just how often you could find a piece of him in every game, whether it was something he said or somebody who knew him. That's a rare thing when you lose someone like that, right? You know it with Jean Béliveau. You know it with some of your Habs greats that have unfortunately left us over the years. It's really sad as a fan.
Yeah, it is. It is really sad to see some of the legends of the game passing on, but they will forever live in our hearts and our memories, and thanks to the great NHL Films Archive, we'll be able to pull them up anytime on YouTube.
Well, it goes back to what we said off the start of the show, that we don't want too much negativity, but let's face it, last couple of weeks, our teams have been terrible. I'm almost glad we didn't have an episode this past week and a half, because I got a feeling it would be nothing but you and I crying and bitching and moaning and complaining about what's been some abysmal hockey. Terrible hockey.
You know what? And it's funny, because this morning, I thought I would be you know, down about everything that's going on with the Montreal Canadiens, but looking at the standings actually brought a little bit of kind of peace into knowing what is going to happen. As you might remember in our last episode, what I wanted to see in the future for 2018 for the Montreal Canadiens was more of a direction to see where this team is going. And seeing them in fourth last place in the NHL kind of solidifies where this team should be going. They haven't determined yet where they will be going, but at 28th overall, I think it's pretty clear that they're not going to be moving up very much in the standings, and I'm happy seeing them lose more and more and fall further down the standings, as this may be reward for them in the NHL draft lottery coming up.
Wow, you said that with a level of composure that makes me wonder whether you should be having eggnog before we do this show. Because number one, I don't remember what you said in the last episode. I had way too much eggnog around Christmas time. Number two, I think what you're dealing with is in some ways just acceptance. The kind of thing that myself as a Leafs fan had to put up with in 9 of the last 11 years or so. Which is that stunning realization that your team is throwing the NHL year away. Which begs a simple question. Why is Marc Bergevin still in charge? Why is he still in control of the good ship USS Habs, SS Habitant?
Well, he is, he's still the skipper, if we're going along
naval,
the marine sort of motif, the naval motif. He's still the skipper of the ship until June 2022, which is 4.5 years. He's making millions. So, knowing the businessman that Jeff Molson is, I'm sure he doesn't like paying for people who he has fired. but that being said, to see Marc Bergevin still at the helm, yet again with the naval reference, is because it is midseason and typically, NHL teams do not fire their general managers mid-season. Now, the challenge with that, of course, is what is the direction that the Montreal Canadiens will steer this ship towards? And whether, of course, to tank and rebuild or to retool and try to make a push for the playoffs, which is quite impossible to push for the playoffs. They'd probably have to play very close to 700 hockey to get to that 95 point plateau. So if you're going to rebuild, do you want Marc Bergevin as the guy in charge to rebuild? So I'm sure that's kind of the debate, what might be going on between Jeff Molson and whoever he gets his hockey advice from, because there has to be a decision made. What's going to happen and what are they going to do with the team and who is going to do it?
So then it seems to me like the obvious path is before every fan of the Montreal Canadiens, which is accept the fact that this is a lost year, which is a horrible thing to imagine in the middle of December. What are they supposed to do? I mean, there's so much frustration. We talked about what happened with Ottawa a couple of episodes ago. We've talked about the Maple Leafs and how if they start struggling, people start aching and wondering whether or not they're on the right path. It must be absolutely viciously horrible for a Montreal Canadiens fan right now dealing with the current state of affairs.
I think they've passed that. The stages are. Yeah, I think it's acceptance. I think there's some apathy involved with the fan base. And hopefully there's going to be hope for the future. Because right now, I think it is pretty much accepted that they're not going to make the playoffs. It's pretty well clear that they're not going to make the playoffs. So if they begin to retool and start to build up some young assets and young prospects and draft picks, that will breed hope within the fan base. And I think that's all we've got.
And also seeing some resolve wouldn't hurt, right? I mean, the players are competitors, and you've got some big-name competitors out there. And whether or not there are trade rumors swirling around Pacioretty, or whether there's a great deal of criticism against Shea Weber, I want to see these players go out and compete. And guys like Drouin and Galchenyuk and Pacioretty and Plekanec have all been stepping up and proving it in recent games. But they still have that problem of not being able to score. And the Leafs have also had that problem recently, too. There's nothing more frustrating, when your team just can't manage maybe one or two goals per game.
Well, the big guys actually haven't been really stepping it up lately. The guys who are supposed to be leading the way offensively and even inspirationally, whether it be Pacioretty, Drouin, Galchenyuk, have not been at the top of that list. It's been the Gallaghers, and the Nicola Deloriers of the world. It's not the best players who are leading the charge for the Montreal Canadiens, and whether that's a personnel issue or whether that's a character issue, I mean, you can't really question the character of a professional athlete because it requires a lot of character to get where they are, but they need to be playing harder.
Speaking of playing harder, watching the Maple Leafs last couple of games has been painful, which is why I'm glad we have Scott Wheeler on the show, from formerly of Pension Plan Puppets and now with the Athletic NHL, to give us his point of view. What have you noticed about these recent games? Have you been as frustrated as I have in watching what's been like complete and utter ineptness when it comes to scoring goals? I mean, they've got their chances, but they can't buy a goal.
Well, I mean, when you're playing against the Tampa Bay Lightning, the best team in the league, everything's tough to do against them, and scoring goals was obviously a challenge as they were shut out 2-0. They did score a lot of goals, even though it was a loss in Las Vegas. But I think when the schedule came out, and this wasn't any sort of like crazy prediction, I predicted the Leafs would lose that game. New Year's Eve, Las Vegas, young team, young bunch of millionaires. What do you think is going
to
happen?
Yeah, precisely. A disaster just waiting to happen. And it was evident in the third period of that game as the team looked like they were three strides behind every single Golden Knight. Seriously, it was a blitzkrieg. I like using military terms. It was a frontal assault without a flank.
Yeah. But, I mean, what seems to be the problem? Mitch Marner... he heated up a little bit, but then
amazing.
Again has kind of
he's the only one who's shown up.
Not getting the results though. He's looked amazing, but he's not getting the
true.
Results.
You got to finish in this game, right? This isn't the effort league. This is the get it done league. And speaking of,
they don't ask
exactly.
How they just ask how many. Any other cliches?
Well, speaking of, don't say this too loudly, but I don't know if you've looked around, but the best player in the NHL. The best two players might be Andrei Vasilevsky and Nikita Kucherov. Why aren't we hearing more about these guys? Now that you've seen them in person, you can appreciate what they represent and why Tampa Bay should be a favorite to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Yeah, I don't know why we're not... I don't know. I don't know why we're not hearing more about... Maybe because Nikita Kucherov has... I don't know. Is it because he's Russian? Is it because Vasilevsky is Russian?
Maybe it's something to do with being Russian. Who knows? You see, immediately I talk in that accent and already it's off-putting.
Yeah, it is off-putting, that's for sure. But maybe it's just because, they're not very...
It's a tough market to play in.
And of course the market, Tampa being not a hockey hotbed, we don't hear about them much. But yes, we should be appreciating those two players much more. And I was thinking about this in terms of the All-Star team. I think it'll be Vasilevsky, Anderson, and probably Tuukka Rask representing the Atlantic Division for the All-Star team, which means no Carey Price for Montreal, which probably means that it'll be Brendan Gallagher as the sole default representative for the Montreal Canadiens for the All-Star game.
Yikes, those are like lean years for the Montreal Expos when they only had like one player that would go to the All-Star game each team had to have one player. Doesn't exactly thrill the average fan. But you know, I was going to ask you before we go into the break for some really high-quality crispy rants, I wanted to get your New Year's resolution for your team. If there's one thing you hope that will change, one reasonable thing that will change, what is it?
One thing that I hope changes for the Montreal Canadiens... is that they continue, or they... One thing that I hope changes for the Montreal Canadiens this year is that they will make hockey decisions based on hockey decisions and not based on political decisions.
Wow, that's the best resolution ever. It's nowhere near as good as mine, which is three words, Oliver Ekman Larson.
John Gibson, Jake Allen, David Rittich, Laurent Brossoit, Craig Anderson, Cam Ward, James Reimer, Aaron Dell. These are just some of the goaltenders who have beaten Carey Price in the past month. Yet, as any NHL insider will tell you, any NHLer will tell you, any NHL GM will tell you, Carey Price is a better goaltender than all those goalies. Carey Price is one of the top goaltenders in the world, if not the top, as some people say. But got this theory. If you were to take an 8-year-old House League hockey team and the Montreal Canadiens and trade goaltenders, so the 8-year-old is now goaltending for the Montreal Canadiens and Carey Price now goaltending for the 8-year-old House League hockey team, and you were to pit those two teams against each other, that 8-year-old goalie would beat Carey Price. Why? Because the 8-year-olds wouldn't be able to touch the puck. They wouldn't be able to put a puck past the Montreal Canadiens' 8-year-old goaltender. This just goes to my theory that you do not need the best goaltender in the world to win hockey games. Just take a look at what's been happening recently. The Montreal Canadiens cannot put the puck in the net. And Marc Bergevin and Claude Julien have this grand strategy to win hockey games based on Carey Price standing on his head, game in, game out, and hope to win 1-0 or 2-1. We see it. When the opposition scores their first goal, and God forbid if they score the second goal, you know the game is over. This is the team that Marc Bergevin built. He has built the team from the goaltender out, and it is not working. You do not need the best goaltender in the league to win in today's NHL. And the Montreal Canadiens are living proof showing that Marc Bergevin's strategy on how to build a hockey team is not working.
You know, as I watched the memorial to Johnny Bauer and appreciating his funeral, the way it unfolded in this country, I was quite impressed with so many ways and how it was handled. It was a very elegant ceremony, featured on what seemed to be like 25% of actual Canadian channels, broadcast directly into the homes of Leafs fans, young and old. And it is bittersweet. I mean, Johnny Bauer was an exceptional Maple Leafs player in so many ways. His contributions not only in winning Stanley Cups and in being an upper-tier goaltender regarded as by some the best of his era, it was just so sad to see that that has now changed and moved on in this world of hockey for us. We lose our legends. It's inevitable. That's why we should always take a moment and cherish the ones that are still alive, the ones that are out there and enjoying themselves, whether they're in retirement or still doing any kind of business goals or any kind of ambitions related to day-to-day lifestyle. You know, I look at George Armstrong and I look at Frank Mihalovic and I think to myself, these are warriors who were part of that same era. And it's incredibly sad for fans to accept that all good things must come to an end. But the better that we remember them, and the better that we honor them while they're still with us, before moving on to the next life, is where we'll learn more about each other as people and as fans who love this hockey team. Leafs fan here. My guest on this episode of Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan is a critically acclaimed and highly respected writer and blogger whose work has been featured in Star, The Globe and Mail, SB Nation, and too many media sources to count, along with being a former site expert at the popular Pension Plan Puppets Maple Leafs fan site, which I know many of you out there are already familiar with. Today, he's the National Prospects writer and Marley's reporter at The Athletic. Scott Wheeler is here on HVL. Scott, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Now, Scott, as you can imagine, as we're speaking, there are very heavy emotions, I would imagine, in the city by virtue of the sad news regarding Johnny Bauer, who, to say that he was simply a legend, I don't think would be doing enough justice. By all accounts, this was a gentleman who touched so many people's hearts. That's why if you go on Sportsnet or TSN right now, I think they've got 7 or 8 different channels looking specifically at this memorial. Scott, I'd like to get your impressions as someone who's written about him recently for The Athletic on how he's touched other people's lives. What did Johnny Bauer mean to you as a Maple Leafs fan who didn't really get a chance to see him play?
Yeah, obviously, I'm a completely different generation, but I think growing up, Johnny Bauer was still Johnny Bauer, and he never really changed from the legend that he was for my parents and even my grandparents to the legend that he became for my generation. So it's been extremely sort of fulfilling and interesting to get to know some of the people who got to know him in the last week. I just published a story at The Athletic last night on a group of complete strangers he once met at a golf course and the impact he made on their lives, whether it be showing up to the high school hockey team game that one of the guys coached to giving them advice and sending them things over the years, or just keeping in touch and picking up a call whenever one of these guys from a foursome that he once played golf with would call. And I think it just speaks to the kind of guy he is. I spoke with some of the charities and other people that sort of ran into him over the years, and the people that he chose to leave as a lasting donation at the Mississauga Humane Society and Trinity Health Partners, and who really cared for him in his final days. And it really is just incredible to see everywhere he went, he was beloved, and obviously he had the historic career on the ice and one of the greatest save percentages in NHL history, and he did it all while playing in his late 30s and early 40s. So the list goes on and on, and he has just kind of become this mythical person. I only had the chance to meet him twice. Both times was very brief hellos at events. And other than his massive hands, the only thing that ever struck me was just how he would look you in the eyes, when, even if it was just for a quick hello, and really try to connect with you on a personal level. And he would have been in his late 80s both times when I met him. And he's just one of those guys who you hear the same stories of generosity over and over again in people you talk to. And obviously today was a special day with the ceremony that the Leafs put on for him. And it's the first time they've ever done that for a member of the organization. So just goes to show how long he's sort of stuck around and really been a part of the organization, and the lasting impact that he'll continue to have.
And it's interesting to see how this regime, this front office, and everyone affiliated with MLSC are really going out of their way to honor him in a way that I think you'll agree we didn't see a lot with previous administrations of the Toronto Maple Leafs. There was always the issue over how to properly retire and pay respect to players. There was Davey Keon's stance against the organization. What does it mean to you, as someone who's followed the team for as long as you have, to see them not only honoring these legends, but really going above and beyond to allow younger generations to bridge the gap with those who are now looking at what is truly a hero that has passed into the sunset?
There's no question. I think it's a step in the right direction. I'm of the belief that the Leafs have historically done a pretty poor job of paying respect to the people who have made such an impact on the organization and the community and some of the charities that they support, et cetera. I think in the last few years, they've certainly done a much better job under Brendan Shanahan. But I think, to the same token, you've never had the passing of someone who's nearly as significant to this organization as Johnny Bower was. So there really never was an opportunity for those previous regimes to do something like this. And I'm sure if Bower had passed earlier or whatnot, that the same thing would have happened, and the sort of outpouring of love and respect from within the organization would have always been there, because he's a guy who has been there at every step of the organization. He mm-hmm. was around when John Ferguson Jr. was GM, and he was around when Brian Burke was GM. He's now been around under Lou Lamoriello, and he's just a guy who, it doesn't matter who has come and gone, he's always been that one constant for the organization. So it really is incredible to see him continue to connect with people as decades and decades have passed him by, and continue to be that same humble, graceful, time for everyone kind of guy. And just in talking to people in the last week, I think that's what stood out to people. Is as much as you can talk about his career and his four Stanley Cups and the records that he set and the save percentages he put up in his 40s, I think you also have to sort of almost admire him more for just what he did in retirement and how much of an influence he had on Toronto and the organization and Mississauga, where him and Nancy settled, and the charities that they supported in Mississauga, and the list just goes on and on.
No question. The China Wall, as he was affectionately known by many Maple Leaf hardcore fans, will be missed. And for myself, the Leafs fan, I still remember going to the original Maple Leaf Gardens in the 80s and watching Ed Olczyk passing to Gary Lehman, and somehow always there would be a highlight of Johnny Bower sitting in the stands. He was almost omnipresent that way, wasn't he? This ubiquitous force. I think that's why there's a true sadness there in recognizing that, you know, this is truly the passage of an icon in Maple Leafs land. Let's turn our attention, Scott, to the present day Maple Leafs. And I really, coming out of the break, if you will, now in a new year, I've been watching this team over the last 2 or 3 weeks and have been increasingly uncomfortable with what I'm seeing. And I want to get the official Wheeler perspective on what this Maple Leafs team needs to do to get to the next level of true NHL respectability. And you know what I'm talking about, right? Being considered like their opponents the other night, a balanced enough team. Do you see the answer coming from a prospect in the system taking the jump and maybe surprising us in the spring, or will it happen most likely because of a trade that, ironically enough, may involve prospects?
Well, I think the easy answer always is to say, oh, they can just make a trade and they can fix this problem and they can find that number one defenseman or that number two defenseman that they desperately need to sort of rise above and take that next step. And I think that's extremely unlikely to happen. Nobody's trading those kinds of defensemen these days, and they cost an arm and a leg in free agency. So I think what people really need to be focusing on is this team, this coaching staff, these players, and how they can be better than they are. And I think part of it comes down to systems. I think the Leafs are a much better team when they play fast than when they try to play a more structured defensive game. I just don't think they have the personnel to play that way. I think early on when they were sort of outscoring their problems and winning games 6-3 or 5-3, that was the better team and the more effective team on a night-to-night basis than the one that's trying to hang on and win 2-1 games right now. So I think part of that's on Babcock and maybe a stylistic adjustment that needs to happen. And then you have to look from within for upgrades. And I think defense is obviously the biggest hole this team can score, and they've got a ton of weapons up front. I'd like to see them move on from the likes of Matt Martin or Dominic Moore and those kind of ilk depth role players, but that's probably not going to happen. So you're really looking at the defense as the easiest route for upgrading. And as far as that goes, I like what I've seen out of Travis Dermott. He's a fantastic AHL defender. He's taken on more of a shutdown role this year, and I think there's a good chance that we see him in the Leafs lineup next year. Timothy Liljegren has come in and been almost a star early on in his career as a teenager in the AHL, which has been hugely positive. He has a big fan in Sheldon Keefe. So those are the two names that really jump off the page as guys who can be more than fringe options, like you might expect out of like a Martin Marincin or an Andreas Borgman or a Connor Carrick. So those are the two guys who you're looking at for next year, but there's more to it than that, I think. I think the Leafs need to find a backup goalie they can rely on for more than back-to-backs. We've seen Frederik Andersen has been able to handle the role as a starter, which we weren't sure he was going to be able to when he arrived from Anaheim, and that's fantastic. But they also need to not have him be playing 68, 70 games a year. So
yeah.
They need to find a goalie, and Curtis McElhinney isn't that goalie who can play more than the back-to-backs and who a coach can trust to just go to on the odd night. And maybe give 5 or 6 days off for Andersen. And I think they have that in Garrett Sparks and potentially Calvin Pickard. So that's an upgrade that might be worth considering for next year. But as far as this year goes, I think they are what they are. They'll be competitive. I think they might get out of the first round of the playoffs, but I wouldn't expect them to go much further than that, especially if they run into Tampa.
Well, and hearing you so confidently and authoritatively declare that, I buy into it 110%. Of course, the reason why is because there was a time where if somebody went on social media or checked the Maple Leafs aggregator, your name was all over it. The stuff that you did in particular with pension plan puppets is the stuff that people still talk about today who love to follow this team. I'm wondering if maybe you can take a few minutes and talk about what it was like making the transition from being involved with fan-based selfless contributions from opinions that are derived from people who are simply admiring the game into becoming the authority that you are with The Athletic?
I'm not sure I would call myself an authority. I'm still very much a young guy who's trying to sort of continue to establish his voice and build credibility. And I think there's certainly people at The Athletic who have a lot more credibility as far as years and the work that they've produced goes. But It certainly is a different transition working in that sort of blogosphere versus what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
The end goal was to always do what I'm doing now, and I always tried to write like that. I never tried to sort of cater to fans or be a fan's writer. I always tried to sort of distance myself from that and write as objectively as I could. And I've found myself increasingly over the last 5-6 years since I began writing disinterested in the results of the game and more interested in player analysis and that kind of thing. So I've tried to build a niche, analyzing players, looking at sort of prospect progression, that kind of thing, while also trying to tell stories and fashion out a niche as a journalist. So it was a completely different role at Pension Plan Puppets. I was kind of in charge and counted on to sort of lead the other staff and help develop plans for the kind of coverage we were going to do and that kind of thing. I edited a lot. Now I'm just focused on my own work, and I've been granted a leash to sort of be able to focus on what I do and make sure that what I do is very good. So that's certainly been liberating, but my work at PPP was a huge launching pad for me, and incredibly grateful for the opportunities that they gave me to kind of try and build my voice and build a sort of presence in the community.
No, you've certainly done that. And speaking of the work that you're doing with The Athletic, maybe take a moment and tell us about what you've got on the go that fans can expect in the weeks to come, and why they should take a serious look at The Athletic as a subscription-based service that they will not regret.
There's a lot on the go in the new year. I'm really excited about what 2018 has to offer. I actually leave tomorrow for a road trip for a story that I've been working on for coming on 3-4 months now. I can't really say too much about it, but it'll be probably the biggest story I've ever written. I mean, it'll be out at the end of January, middle to the end of January, so I'm really excited about that. Lots of more Marlies and Leafs coverage coming throughout the year, and then my second draft ranking will be out in February, so I'm kicking away at that and trying to get to as many OHL games as I can to see some of the Ontario guys a little bit more. But as far as The Athletic, I think what makes The Athletic unique is, and it's a stick that a lot of people have heard from many of our writers, but I think it holds true, is that we have been given the freedom to focus on doing quality work. We don't do a ton of news coverage. You won't see very many game reports, that kind of thing. We're focused on doing insightful features and storytelling. We're focused on doing analytics. We're focused on doing a lot of video breakdowns, at least I am. And we just want to do good work, whether it means I'm writing one thing a week or one thing a month or five things a week if time permits. As long as it's good, that's our only sort of modus operandi. And our goal is to make sure that the subscribers are happy and that other people continue to subscribe. And there's no reasons that we need to be concerned with clicks or anything like that. And it gives our writers and our journalists a lot of freedom to do their best work and to really put in the time that's necessary to do good work rather than rushing to meet a deadline. So I think it results in a better product, and we hope that it means that we're unique in the media landscape, and that's the end goal.
Well, as far as shticks go, that was probably the best one I've heard in a while, and you threw in a little Latin. Just the Latin alone, I think, will make our audience want to explore it further. You can find Scott and his excellent work on Twitter at Scott C. Wheeler. And be sure to look for his fine work at theathletic.com. Scott, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate you coming on the show, and we hope to speak with you soon here on Habs Fan vs. Leafs Fan.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.